Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the podcast for Doom Patrol fanciers, with heaps of craft and baking tips for those who want to give their house that fresh, doomy feel.
We don't actually do any of that, Mike. What we do is we fill people's ears with Doom Patrol talk to tide us and them, but mostly us, over until the Doom Patrol is published once again.
Can we talk about other stuff?
Sure.
Then we shall. We'll talk of comics and hobbies and stuff and feelings, especially feelings, Paul.
No feelings. Just hard facts, statistics, crunchable data. I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks. And you can also find us on Facebook, and our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com. And you can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com.
And I'm Mike, and you can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve, and you can also find Wilfred the Sentient Show Twitter account, which is at WFDPod. So, Paul, without any emotional responses, how was your week in comics?
I've read Superman Doomed, which is a great big hardcover, and it took me a long time to read. And it was, I set up a base camp around the first 30 pages, and then I had some Sherpas and made my way into it.
Wow.
But, did you read that story at all?
I did not, no.
It's a big story.
That's only a recent one, isn't it?
It's very recent, yes. Yeah. Yes, I was lucky to pounce on it when they were uncertain how much it would be online, so I actually got it for like $24, and the final book came out to be about $50, which was pretty good. Huh. Yeah. Did I put feelings in that? It was...
Yes, you did.
It was a good outcome.
Too late. Feelings detected.
Oh, bugger. But yes, this book was very much Superman fights Doomsday, Superman defeats Doomsday, Superman is infected by Doomsday, Superman turns into Doomsday. Mm-hmm. But the big part of the story that I had no idea was coming was Brainiac is on the attack and everything. And the end of the book was kind of strange, but it all sort of hooked into a certain little event that you might be dabbling in called Convergence.
Ooh, Convergence.
Yeah, okay. So I may have lost my convirginity a bit.
God. Well played. God. Oh, dear.
What about you, Mike?
I had some good books. Sabrina number 2 finally came out 6 months after the first issue. So
what's
was
the rush with that?
I can't recall. I think there was some reason at the time, but it's completely escaped me now, and I can't be bothered looking it up. But hopefully they're back on track with a more logical shipping order now. But yeah, it was good. It was actually some really good background info on the villain, Madam Satan. So that was cool.
Is she a good guy?
No. There was also Sensation Comics, which had probably one of my favorite covers of all time on that series, which has only been going for 9 issues. But anyway, there was also Thor number 7, which is getting closer to us actually finding out who Thor is now. So it was cool. There was also, yes, there was Convergence. And yeah, the story is progressing a bit more now. It's getting interesting. I saw another comment online saying it was very similar to a dumbed down video game fighting game. I thought it's a bit harsh, but a bit fair.
Okay.
And what I think is missing from Convergence, and I could be showing my age here, is that what I think it needs is a toy line tie-in. It's almost like they're setting up all these massive battles to happen, but if they had action figures to go with it, it would kind of, I don't know, seem more fitting, because that's all it seems to be that's about to happen, just big fights between...
It's like there are these wars, but they're in secret.
Yes, exactly. Yes, you know, and people that would never have met, like a Red Superman and a blue Superman from different cities. So it just, it reminded me of, yeah, these old Secret Wars from back in the day where there was a toy line to go with it. I don't know why they haven't. Maybe they'll do it after the fact. But it seemed to me that that's what was missing, and it also kind of reminded me that maybe there aren't a lot of kids reading this sort of stuff these days anymore. I don't know.
I'm a long-term massive DC fan, and I'm not reading it.
Yeah, all right.
To me, it feels like the petting zoo of the pre-52. You know, come and visit these old stories you like that we've got in captivity.
Yeah.
But from what I've heard, that people are fairly unhappy that they're getting things that they want, but in a way that they can't really enjoy them because it's, you know, these heroes that they like, but they're under the dome and, you know.
Yeah.
And forced into a situation. So, you know, there's a story being explored that people aren't really that interested in exploring, even though they love the characters and miss them.
Yeah. It's kind of like, if DC were that interested in doing these stories and characters from way back when, they'd be doing them. But no, let's just trot them out just for a bit of nostalgia and then move on in 2 months' time. Mm. So that's why I'm pretty much avoiding all the tie-in issues and sticking with just the main story, just to see if it makes any sense at all.
Well, if I were to buy any, I would do the opposite. I would actually just read some of the side stories and not read the main story.
I think I've heard more positive about the tie-ins than the main story, to be honest. So, yeah. But, you know, you can't please everyone.
I'm looking forward to the issue 6 twist.
Issue 6 twist?
Oh, there's usually a twist around issue 6 of an 8-issue miniseries, isn't there?
I thought it was 9. But anyway.
9. Oh. Good luck with that, Mike.
Thanks. Thanks. Oh, look, it wouldn't be the first time I've been wrong about something. It happens. Yeah.
What is that noise?
That would be the Doom Clock.
Saved by the Doom Clock.
Well. This week, looking at the numbers on the Doom Clock, we can see that the last book that our favourite team appeared in was issue 22 of volume 5 from back in July of 2011. So we're looking at 3 years and almost 9 months since we last had our own Doom Patrol series.
That's an eternity.
It's an eternity, all right. It's like, gosh, it'll does be 4 upset years. You, it does upset me.
Feelings.
Gotcha. Damn. The last appearance of the Doom Patrol, though, was in Justice League 33 back in October of 2014, so just over 6 months ago. So, now, speaking of convergence and appearances of the Doom Patrol, are we going to take into account the Tangent Universe Doom Patrol?
It's Doom Patrol in name. Mm. Only the for those who don't, you know, the tangent concept, it was Dan Jurgens' brainchild, who was big on the Superman books at the time, and he said, what if we took all these names that people know and love and just came up with, you know, new imaginings for these names? So, you know, we'll do Nightwing, but it's a team, not a dude with a hot butt. We'll do the Doom Patrol, but it's a different Doom Patrol to the Doom Patrol that everyone knows and adores and misses and talks about and does podcasts. Yeah, you get the gist.
Yeah.
So I believe that the Convergence event is bringing back the Tangent Doom Patrol in the Teen Titans book?
Correct. Yes. I guess I'll have to buy it and I'll make the judgment call when I read it.
Taking one for the team.
That's what I do. That's what I do. But this week in Doom Patrol history, and it actually ties into, I guess, the sort of theme for this episode, we had Doom Patrol number 104 of Volume 1 come out, and that issue was titled The Bride of the Doom Patrol. And it went on sale this week in 1966 for 12 US cents. And in this story, as you might have guessed, Rita got married. She married
That's wonderful, Mike.
Yes, she married Steve Dayton.
Oh, There's good news and there's bad news.
Yes, yes. Even despite the machinations of the Brotherhood of Evil trying to disrupt the wedding, and also Robot Man and Negative Man causing some shenanigans to try and spoil the wedding as well, it all went ahead. And they even had the Justice League and the Teen Titans there at the wedding. So, yay.
And they were happily married ever after.
Well, for a given value of ever. But, yeah. Anyway, that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
For Doom's Plane this week, we're going back to the swinging 60s to pick up where we left off from episode 9. We have three great classics from the Doom Patrol Volume 1, and they're issues number 91, 92, and 93, beginning in 1964.
Mm-hmm.
So what's up first there, Mike?
First of all, my favorite character of all time is getting the spotlight in issue number 91, the issue titled Mento, the man who split the Doom Patrol.
Wow.
I should have just called him Yoko, but anyway.
Yeah. Fantastic. How does this one start?
We have the patrol trying to defuse a bomb. And it's going to blow up a 3-square block radius if they don't get rid of it. But apparently Rita can't shrink in time to get to it. Cliff can't get to it. There's radio waves from a nearby tower stopping Negative Man from actually getting to it. Because this is back in the day when radio waves affected him. And then, of course, a new superhero turns up to outdo them all. And he says, "My name is Mento. And I've got a superior brain suppressed to us. suppressed. I've got a superior brain harnessed to this special apparatus that he wears on his head. And he's going to destroy the bomb. And he uses the power of telekinesis, which actually amazes Larry, who tells us what telekinesis is. It's the power to move objects with thought waves. So Mento gets the bomb out of the way, uses a final bit of TK energy to blow it up in midair, out of harm's way, and everyone's cheering Mento. And I hate Mento.
Mento has he looks like he's harnessing the power of smugness at all points. He's got his hands on his hips. He's got a lightning bolt on his chest. Yes, he thinks he's pretty damn good, doesn't he?
Mm. Yeah, he is the 5th most richest man in America.
He is.
Let's not forget that. He reminds us at every opportunity.
Interesting to note, in 1964, he was the 5th richest, and in 1981, he was still the 5th richest, according to the DC Universe.
Well, yeah, I wonder how much time had roughly passed, but that's... look, comic book timelines, you know, it's akin to comic book science, so... and then Mento makes it quite clear that he's fairly interested in Elastigirl and starts flirting with her. And Larry and Cliff are quite surprised that Rita decides to go off with him.
Yeah, they didn't know she was into smug bastards. But apparently it's her thing.
It is her thing. Well, she does say to Mento that one of the reasons she, you know, left with him was that she was worried Larry and Cliff were going to tear him apart and have a go at him. And then she also wants to see what makes an egomaniac tick. So she's pretty switched on. You know, she's detected that smugness of his.
Seen so many people I know fall for dickheads. You know, it happens.
Before too long, she's taken back to Mr. Steve Dayton's mansion, which he calls his little place. He's greeted by his butler, and he's rattling off all these business dealings.
Straight into his monogram dressing gown, I notice.
Yeah. And then he takes her into his lab and says, you know, he's also a professor of research psychology at a medical college. And she's sort of going, oh, you're an adventurer, a financier, and a research psychologist. Is there anything you can't do? And he's like, well, hardly. I've developed the strength of body and mind. Whatever I want, I get. And now, Miss Farr, I want you.
Very creepy eyebrows going on in that panel. But to demonstrate his strength, he picks up a cage full of monkeys.
Yeah.
So I don't know what he's doing with a cage full of monkeys. Maybe he sews them together like the chief. he could make a one of those string of monkeys that like where you link the arms.
Oh God, yeah. I thought you were gonna say like the human centipede, but anyway.
Oh, let's not go there.
Anyway, so Rita, she's kind of getting to know Steve, and she's sort of coming to terms with his arrogance. And she's saying, well, I'm not really going to leave the patrol. They're my family. And Steve kind of accepts this and says, okay, we'll leave it that way for now, but I'm not going to give up on you. And, oh, God, isn't that a mouthful?
he announces his intention to stalk.
But meanwhile, back in the city, these weird colored blobs start floating down and landing in amongst the civilians, and they start turning into large man-shaped beings that start wrecking the joint.
Yeah, and they're different colors apparently, which you and I can't tell.
Not in the showcase editions, no.
Yes.
Thankfully, by the power of text boxes, we know that there's red ones and blue ones and silver ones.
Silver ones.
Mm.
Yes. Remind me of the old cereal toys, only huge.
So before too long, the chief is sort of sending the team to go and tackle these bizarre beings, which the chief has pegged as being androids and not human at all. So the team, there's actually some really great shots here of the team taking them on. You've got Cliff swinging one round. You've got Rita sort of making herself large and smacking them together. That's probably one of my all-time favorite panels of Rita
as
well. That
is a great panel.
It is.
Rita is quite attractive.
Yes. Yes, I will say that. She's also, just smacking these giant androids together. So, before too long, the team realized that the more they damage these androids, they start actually multiplying and making things even worse, and that they're going to get outnumbered very soon. And just before they get completely overwhelmed, there's a message from the chief through Cliff's little communication box on his chest, and he's saying, get back to HQ, I've figured out what's going on, but you're not going to believe it.
Good golly. He wants them to check out the giant screen in the HQ, doesn't he? The giant monitor.
It's our first giant monitor, this issue.
Sweet.
Yes, and on this giant monitor, the chief has discovered a small, well, I don't know how small it is, a fantastic city that's floating above the Earth. And that's where these colored, shape-changing androids came from. And of course, at that moment, there's another rocket ship flying towards the city. And who's piloting it? Mento.
That super J-hole, Mento.
And of course, he's saying that the reason he wants to go there is he wants to show up the Doom Patrol. And, he'll take care of everything before they even get there. But of course, comic book science being what it is, a giant mechanical claw comes out of this flying city, grabs Mento's rocket ship and drags him within the city. And he's soon before a raised platform, which has got these android beings on either side. And out of the shadows steps the alien known as Gargwax.
Gargwax! let's describe Gargwax for those listening without the visual
mm-hmm.
component. So Gargwax is a overweight, bald, green alien wearing a very cool headband with a little jewel in the middle and some rather fetching sparkly earrings.
They're like explosion shapes, but earrings, yeah.
Yeah. And he's wearing basically a muumuu.
Yep. Yeah, he's... I love the fact that this is the first issue that both Mento and Gargwax appear in.
Yeah.
It's, this is one of my favorite old school issues of the Doom Patrol. But anyway, before too long, Mento learns that Gargwax is actually using the Earth as his testing ground for his android creations because he, being Gargwax, has been banished from his own world. He wants to go back and, smack some people around using his army of android beings. As you do.
Awesome. And His plan seems to involve telling everyone what he's doing by making giant sculptures that spell out how many days till the
yeah
the doom of the world, I guess.
Yeah, that's using trains and building wrecks and giant pipelines to do algebra, basically. X plus three, yeah, with the X made of two train carriages, as you do.
Lashed together, yeah, lovely.
Yeah. Those androids are pretty good at what they do.
Yeah. And what they do makes no sense.
Anyway, while this is going on, the chief is getting the Doom Patrol ready to go and get towards Gargwax's floating city. They're building their own rocket ship, as you do. And we quickly cut back to Mento kind of in a brainwashing chamber.
With big monitors.
Big monitors everywhere. Every wall is a big monitor with Gargwax telling Mento that you will do my bidding. You will, you will, you will. I don't know how long that's been going on for, but in this one panel, Mento automatically says, yes, I'll do whatever you want. Only stop. Just stop. So we can assume it's been going for a while. The Doom Patrol's rocket then flies towards the city, and they get a bit suspicious when a telekinetic beam stops their ship and drags it towards the city, taking their control away from them. And they're soon inside the city, and it looks like Mento has teamed up with Gargwax.
Oh, what a jerk.
Well, yeah, yes, exactly. Unsurprisingly, a fight breaks out between all the guys, but Rita is actually concerned about Steve. You know, Negative Man knocks him out, and Rita says, I'm not going to leave him here. I can't believe he was in league with that thing up there, that thing being poor old Gargwax.
Yep.
So the team are trying to make their escape, and Gargwax is, you know, very...
Booby traps.
Yeah, booby traps. He's very pleased with himself that they didn't realize he's got booby traps everywhere. And there's
a planner.
He's a planner. So the team are running away. They open a doorway and they kind of fall into this other room. And there's all this smoke and vapors coming. And there's a really unfortunate panel of Rita. Kind of as she's making herself into giant form so that the other guys can catch hold of her arms and she'll stop them falling to their doom. Yeah, she kind of spreads her legs in a really unfortunate way, and it's only through good panel placement that her dignity is somewhat preserved.
It's the sort of pose that Milo Manara would use in some of his covers, if you know what I mean, from the other side.
Yeah. Topical,
but it's not played for the same impact.
No. It's yeah, I don't know what they were thinking. Anyway, thankfully, they make it out of that room, and she shrinks back to normal size, thank God. They get trapped in another room with a gigantic fan that's pulling them towards it. So, of course, Cliff semi-sacrifices himself and lets his metallic body go into the blades of the fan to save the day.
The crap out of him. Take it back.
He looks like spaghetti, basically. So they make it out of that room. Next, they're actually in, I guess, the factory, you would call it, where the androids are being created. So Negative Man says, it's my turn. I'll fly around. I'll disrupt all the circuitry and stop production of any more androids happening. And, of course, Mento says, well, no, look, leave it up to me, because actually Negative Man gets shot by a bit of electricity that was protecting the factory. Mento says, watch me use my telekinetic beam, and he throws all the androids back into the pits that were making them. He says, I'll send the chicks, quote-unquote, back to destroy their own incubator. And there's lots of explosions and things being blown up. It's all very convenient, in a way.
And they jump in their rocket and fly away just as the entire city explodes.
Yes.
I guess that's the last we'll ever see of Gargwax.
And his plastic androids. Thanks, yeah. Mento, for everything. And then Mento, being Mento, shoots back with, I don't want your gratitude, Rita. I want your love. And someday I'll have it.
Whether you want to or not.
Yes. And so the team finally land on the ground And Cliff and Larry are discussing it, and Larry says, "I don't get it, Cliff. What does she see in that guy?" Cliff responds, "Beats me. He's only brilliant, handsome, courageous, witty, and a multimillionaire. The girl's got to be crazy."
The Troll of Mento is like, you've been reading the Doom Patrol for a while. You love the characters. You love Larry. You love Cliff. And he just swans in and just puts them down constantly.
This is why I don't like Mento. He's such a... I know children listen to our show, Paul, so I'm trying to restrain myself.
He's a bad, bad man.
He's a jerk. He's just a jerk.
Total J-hole.
Yes. Anyway, we'll then jump ahead to issue number 92, which is called The Sinister Secret of Dr. Time.
Dr. Time.
Now, I thought this was the one and only appearance of Dr. Time.
I did some research. Yes. Let's share that later.
Okay. So tell us about the opening of issue 92, Paul.
Okay. Well, Rita's off to the hairdresser. It's a dynamic opening.
Yes. Yeah. Hairdresser, oh brother.
But she doesn't want to help the Doom Patrol on their... They've been called in to say... Well, it's one of those babies in a bank's vault situations that come up constantly. So yeah. The bank manager and his wife were visiting the bank, and the baby crawled into the vault just as the time locked it. You know, they have to rescue the baby.
I'd be questioning the worthwhileness of your security personnel at that bank, but anyway.
This would be an awkward HR situation where you have to explain that to management and stuff. Yeah. I don't envy them. There would be some paperwork as well, I imagine. And if it was a government department, there'd be rules about preventing this happening again.
Oh, God.
Could you imagine? Anyway, enough of that. So Larry tries to rescue the baby, and there's interference. He, what does he do? Smashes some part of the safe. But he gets electrocuted, and he can't rescue the child. And then, and Larry's trapped inside there with the child in his Negative Man form. So, you know, the old 60-second clause, he's going to die if he doesn't get back to his body. So Rita's had enough of this. She just gets Giant and rips the safe off. The door off the safe completely.
Yep.
Larry, reunited with his negative energy, doesn't die, which is why he's in all the comics after this for quite some time.
My goodness.
Yeah. The baby's reunited with the parents. Everyone is happy. But Rita's talking a fair bit about this millionaire she's thinking of seeing, which is why she got her hair done. And Larry's not happy with that. Larry doesn't. You know, not a fan. But she does say he's a Steve Dayton is a little too egotistical for her taste.
That's twice she said that now.
Yeah, but she just can't stay away. But Dayton, what a jerk. He's basically leaving Rita to herself at the moment, and Larry and Cliff have realised that Rita's not happy because... You know, she's being ignored by Steve. So, Cliff, what's the blokest thing you can do? You could go over to Steve Dane's house and threaten him to date Rita.
Oh, of course.
And Cliff thumps his metal fist on Steve's desk, and Steve retaliates by chucking the whole desk at Cliff using his mentally...
It's a fight scene with a literal table flip. A literal table flip.
But it's a huge desk. And they're having a bit of a standoff, and then Cliff grabs this massive lamp in the room and bends it into like a crook and sticks it around Steve's neck and then hangs him outside the building.
And threatens to dunk him in the pool.
Unless he takes Rita out for dinner. And he said, "Orchids, dining, the theatre, dancing, champagne, the works." And, yeah. Steve agrees, but you know he's not happy, but he'll do it. Then we cut to part two, which is called The Terrifying Dr. Time, which is spelled T-Y-M-E, not with an H, not like Herb, The Terrifying Dr. Herb. Dr. Flavor. No, anyway, not him. And he is experimenting. So in the great tradition of scientists in the Doom Patrol, he has an animal, and this one is a frog. And the frog starts to leap in the air, and he affects it with his time beam, and time slows around the frog. It's a localized time effect, and the frog is in midair for quite some time, and then he chucks a ball and drops a feather next to it, and he makes the ball slow down in the air, and the feather races past the ball to the ground. So then, naturally, he gets on board a plane and starts time-zapping things and robbing the plane, and then he leaps out of the plane and time-zaps things to make it slow so he gets to the ground safely.
Yeah, and then, he slows his own descent.
Yeah, and there's a weird mystery because the plane has landed and it's 15 minutes late, but no one on the plane realizes that they're 15 minutes late. But they do know that one of the passengers isn't there anymore, and it's probably Dr. Time. So let's describe Dr. Time for people. He's basically a dude with a cape whose face is a clock.
Yes.
And I was quite unsure. Is his face an actual clock or...
I'm guessing it's a mask.
Yeah, it's like a helmet, but it flattens his face out. And he sort of has this open bit near the bottom where his mouth would be, which shows the cogs.
Yeah.
And a little bit of a moustache going, some sort of clock moustache. I don't know.
And the hands are pointed at, let's say, about 12 past 9, maybe, to form like
according
a frown.
According to his face, it's 12 past 9.
And that doesn't change. Yeah, never change. Yeah. So I'm assuming
he doesn't tell correct
mask.
Time with his face.
No. He can do everything but that.
Anyway, he's a bit of an arrogant scientist villain, isn't he?
Seems to be another theme this episode. Yeah.
And he goes to a great factory and the night watchman tries to shoot him and he slows the bullet down, walks past, and he makes off with the payroll from this factory. And he slows down the guards and the police who are chasing him. And then Mento tries to stop him. Mento is out on the date with Rita and they see him. And Mento leaps into action, even though he hasn't got his helmet, his stupid ugly face helmet thing. But Dr. Time slows him down in midair. And Rita does the first thing she can think of, which is shrink down and catch a ride with Dr. Time's car.
Yep.
To find out what's the deal. We cut to the Doom Patrol headquarters where the chief has finally worked out what happened with the plane, and he's realized that there is a person who can control time and, you know, slow it down locally in certain areas. And of course he's got a machine that he's invented that can trace this energy when it's in use.
Of course he does. He's a chief.
Minutes of work to come up with that.
Yeah.
What do we think that could be?
Comic book science?
Correct.
Yes, I passed.
Yes, and then we cut to Dr. Time's headquarters, and he's a clock fancier, I would say.
He's got a lot of clocks.
Future, isn't it?
Even Rita says, what a kook.
Yes, Rita's spying on him, but then she trips a clock pendulum and makes a noise, and she gets caught.
She gets caught a bit too easily for my liking.
Yeah,
she kind of explains it, but...
She should have gone giant and smashed his face in. This is my opinion.
Yeah.
Anyway, and she gets stuck inside a clock that's very noisy, a little glass dome one, because she's still tiny, and she can't focus in there. It's too noisy and she can't stand it, and so she is trapped. Then we cut to Steve, who's now in his awesome Mento outfit.
That's one word starting with A.
Oh dear. And he's contacting the Doom Patrol to say that Rita's been captured, and he wants the Doom Patrol to come and help him rescue them. And the Doom Patrol, Larry, and is like, no way, we're going to get her. But Chief thinks they may need Mento's help. So all three of them rush out and jump into some rocket car that the Chief has invented.
Of course he has.
handy. And Mento is, you know, knocking the car because it's Doom Patrol related, and he doesn't like things related to the Doom Patrol.
Mm.
But then the rocket car takes off like a rocket.
Yes,
you could say.
Mm. In your face, Mento.
Yeah, and they hone in on where Rita is using the Chief's detector, and it's an old castle called Merwin's Folly.
Yeah.
It does look like the sort of thing you would build if you were a crazy person. Yes. And as they get the close, they're about to walk in, and he has walls of fire which protect his entryway. So, handy.
That's you do, yeah.
Yeah. But Cliff is not stopped. He just walks through the walls of fire. Robot body, very handy. Mm-hmm. And then he sabotages the pipelines that cause the fire to stop. But Dr. Time is keen for them to come in because he's got a whole bundle of goodies waiting for them.
That's actually what he says. He's got a whole bundle of quote unquote goodies waiting for them. Good God.
He's got Tim Brooke Taylors and Bill Oddies. Just a shout out to the American listeners who don't get that reference.
Yeah, they won't get that at all. We're going to get bombarded with questions. Anyway,
in through the drawbridge, trapdoor, spikes.
Mm.
And we're in a chapter of the comic called The Clocks of Death.
Yeah.
But Larry turns into Negative Man. I don't know what happens to his body here. Oh, it's so fast that
So
fast that he breaks all the spikes before they land on them. So he saves Mento's life.
Oh.
Could have maybe rethought that a bit.
Yes.
Anyway, Cliff grabs the broken spikes and basically does a bit of spike-agami or squishes them down and makes a ladder. Some sort of. There's some craft for everyone.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Spike ladder craft, and he makes a great big ladder, and they climb out.
And I'm glad it's at this stage that Mento is, you know, starting to show the guys a bit of respect.
Yeah,
you know, yeah.
They actually know what they're doing.
Mm.
Yeah. And Mento, they confront Dr. Time in his castle hallway, which has elaborate chandeliers, the sort of type that will crush you if they fall on you, and lots of suits of armor around, and Mento uses his telekinesis to lob suits of armor towards Dr. Time. But Dr. Time, haven't they seen what he does? He slows down time. Yeah, and then he gets out of the way of the suits of armor. He's pretty stoked about that and has a little cackle as he runs away. And then he speeds up time where the chandelier is, and it starts to fall to bits as entropy takes its toll on the chain.
Mm.
And then it's falling towards Mento and Cliff, who have time to talk about it, I've noticed. Look out, unless you want to wear a brass halo, says Cliff. And they get out just in time. And Dr. Time is fleeing up the stairs away from them. And then he tries to zap Larry. Yeah, but it bounces off the wall, so Larry is slowed down.
Mm. Mm. Even after the Chief expressly warned them not to let Negative Man go near Dr. Time.
You've got to listen to the Chief, don't you?
That's why he's called the Chief. He knows what's what.
Yeah.
He's a man with a plan.
Yeah, well, but we finally see that Rita has overcome her distraction from all the clock bonging and everything and has started breaking the clock to bits inside. And she uses a broken pendulum to smash the glass, and then she can get really big, which is cool.
Yeah.
First thing she does is grabs Dr. Time, and then meanwhile, in the interest of keeping the comic visually interesting, Cliff has decided to walk up a wall using his magnetic feet while Mento hangs off his body. Is there a leg around Cliff's crotch? An arm around Cliff's crotch?
I had not noticed this until just now, but you are correct. Cliff is walking sideways up the wall. He's got his left arm around Mento. Mento has his right arm sort of going around Cliff's back and around Cliff's neck, and Mento has his left arm right between Cliff's legs.
It's a good time to have a robot body, I'd say. And Larry is dangling from Mento's ankles.
Yeah. I don't know why Negative Man just didn't carry them both up to the next level. But anyway, as you said, visually interesting.
Visually interesting. Oh, dear.
Anyway.
Yeah. So they lob in a gas grenade that the chief gave them.
Mm-hmm.
Not realizing that Rita's already in there, so it knocks out Rita.
Ugh.
Yeah. And Dr. Time explains in quite a long sentence that he has a gas filter inside his mask.
Of course he does.
It's like, shoot him now. Anyway. Oh, dear. And Negative Man comes out of Larry. Larry collapses. Hey.
Yay.
And this is like the worst case scenario. Negative Man gets frozen by the time beam. So that's jeopardizing Larry's body. 60-second comic book science there.
Twice in one issue. Come on, Larry. Honestly.
But Mento grabs Dr. Time, lofts him into the air, and they compel him to slow down Larry's body so that... Negative Man and Larry's body are both slowed down so they can have time to sync up without the 60-second arbitrary clause of death affecting them.
Yes.
Oh, dear. And then all the clocks chime for some reason and Cliff yells at Rita to wake up.
Yeah. And
they can't get her out of there in time. Because the whole base is going to explode in has become a tradition now, really. Exploding bases at the end.
Well, that's the thing. Dr. Time was saying, you know, he's planted a bomb in one of the 600 clocks he's distributed throughout the castle. And it's going to explode in 15 minutes. So, yeah, they kind of want Rita to wake up and shrink back to normal size.
Yeah, she's giant. They can't drag her out while she's giant.
No one can.
So, Mento, using his mind powers, tells her she must reduce herself. The power of my thought waves will do it for you. And Mento basically overrides her own control, something to remember for later, I reckon, mm-hmm. and shrinks her down. And then they all escape just as the castle goes boom.
Phew. They got out of there. Thank God.
And I was looking at Dr. Time thinking, I've never seen that guy before or since or any time.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently he was one of the scientists on Oolong Island in the 52 series. And he was next seen in 2007. So that's a big gap, 1964 to 2007.
Just
that's
a bit,
43 years.
Wow.
So he was one of the crazy scientists in that. And I believe he showed up in the Giffen Doom Patrol run.
I was just about to ask whether he did. I'll have to go back and have a look.
Basically said he's no longer a mad scientist and apologised to the team.
Huh. That was nice of him.
Yeah.
Good work.
Yeah. So, yes, that's the first time I've ever seen Dr. Time. And I think he's a great goofy-looking villain.
Yes.
Yeah. With a very specific power set.
Oh, yeah. We then...
He could have made a fortune child mining, Dr. Time.
Well, yes, he could.
Just slow down the kids. They sit there for a few seconds in their mind. Well, the parents go and do whatever they want.
Oh. Now, why didn't he think of that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway. You're just not evil enough, Paul.
I'm sorry.
We then... go forth and start up with issue number 93 of the Doom Patrol with the storyline Showdown on Nightmare Road.
Which, why is it called that?
There is a very brief scene towards the end of the story where they're actually on
Nightmare Road.
Nightmare Road. Hang on a minute, I'll edit this bit out.
I could ask that question later if you want.
No, that's cool. I'll just edit it all together. Yes, the here we go. Well, the final climactic battle in this issue happens at sort of an aquatic theme park called Aqualand, which happens to be on Knight's Moor Road. So K-N-I-G-H-T apostrophe S space M-O-O-R Road. But apparently, according to the chief, in a pivotal panel, he says the local people call it Nightmare Road.
Did you say pivotal panel?
Well, it's like, yes, it's not really that important a scene other than to explain the title of the issue.
Pivotal panels.
Well, it's also pretty cool because it shows him, you know, getting out of his car that he's been driving around with this, with a ramp and stuff. And, oh, look, it seemed important at the time. Whatever, Paul.
Hey, can I talk about the cover before we start?
Sure.
Giant robot, Rog.
Mm.
Yep. The chief created Rog, if you remember back to an earlier issue.
Yes.
Yes, and the Doom Patrol destroyed Rog. But Rog has been rebuilt.
Mm-hmm.
And on the cover, there is an awesome, awesome fight between Rita and Rog going on.
Yes.
And you can see Monsieur Mallor inside Rog's dome's cranium.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Rog has picked up a submarine and is trying to hit Rita with the submarine, which is awesome.
I like how Rita's using her gigantic size scuba diving gear again.
Yes. Good to get that out. I mean, you wouldn't want to waste it.
No, you've got it there. Why wouldn't you use it?
Yeah.
Okay. Just getting my head into gear. Okay. Do you want to kick this one off? Hello? Are you there?
It's the Brotherhood of Evil in...
Hang on. You were completely silent there.
Yes.
It just came back and we said, the Brotherhood of Evil in...
I flipped the page and immediately can't remember what it's about. Oh, yes. The Doom Patrol have been called in to prevent an assassination of a president from another country.
Mm.
So just random presidential assassination prevention services they're offering.
All we know is that it's Premier so, Daniel.
Naturally, they're all in a helicopter above the motorcade. And with their binoculars, they spot there's a gunman. So Larry turns into Negative Man and grabs Rita and Robot Man and flies out of the plane.
See, that's what I mean. Negative Man can carry people, but we had to see Cliff walk up a wall in the previous issue.
I actually feel my life has been enriched from that seeing that panel. I don't know about you. It shouldn't always be what makes the most sense. It should be what's the coolest thing to see.
You just like seeing a man put his hand between a robot man's legs. Right, that's fine. Each to their own. Anyway, continue.
Yes. So, and this is a bit crap. The Doom Patrol are too slow to stop the driver of the car getting shot.
Mm.
Just a bit of a bummer for the driver. So, oh well. But they do race down and Negative Man grabs the bullet before it hits the president. And I would note that this president has a monocle, so I don't think he's probably evil, if I know anything about comics. But possibly, it doesn't matter. Yeah. He's not important to this plot. This is an action scene to open the comic.
Mm-hmm.
The car is veering out of control because the driver's dead, and Rita grabs the car. She grows giant, picks up the entire car, and the president says, a giant girl picking up my car? What kind of country is this, America? Well, it's a big democracy, I believe. Anyway,
yes.
Elastigirl has prevented the terrible calamity. But the killer is getting away. But Robot Man's on the case, so he chases after the killer. and uses his robot body to have the bullets bounce off him. But the assassin has a grenade. Roboman dives on the grenade to prevent further loss of life. And then he has to get in front of another car and the car smashes into him. And
at least he finally stopped the assassin.
You know? Yes, the assassin is finally out of action. Rita gives Larry a kiss on the bandaged cheek.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the cheek, the bandage. His whole body is covered in bandages, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, and then and Cliff is a bit put out because, you know, he's...
Well, he didn't get a kiss on the cheek.
He didn't get a kiss on the cheek.
You know, Mentor gets a kiss on the cheek, I'm sure, off-panel. Larry gets one. Robot Man doesn't.
Yeah. So Rita's a bit concerned about how Cliff is feeling, so she goes into his room and discovers he's got a lot of books, and she didn't know he was such a big reader.
Mm.
She finds a book about a newspaper story about a foreign biologist named Dr. Wilder who's visiting, and then she's wondering, why is Cliff a biology bug? And then we see that Cliff is going to meet this Dr. Wilder, who, if I was Cliff, the appearance of Dr. Wilder would be setting off alarm bells, because he is a creepy little scientist dude.
Yeah, in you know, the history of creepy looking scientists, Dr. Wilder is creepy looking.
Yeah, you wouldn't let him give you a pedicure, let alone going to him for science advice. So Dr. Wilder, part two, who is Dr. Wilder? That's what we're all wondering right now. So we see that Dr. Wilder has taken Cliff into his lab, and we see that he's a bit of a biological experimenter, and he's created a sort of very Morlock-looking monster. It's a giant albino gorilla thing with a sort of pig nose and very squinty eyes that apparently has no brain. So I don't know how that works. Or no intelligence. But he's suggesting to Cliff that he can solve Cliff's metal body issues by putting his brain inside this monstrous creature.
Yeah. Cliff, that would be the second point at which alarm bells would be ringing. Yeah. But anyway.
Well, that's an interesting proposal. But Cliff is actually, get out of here, that's crazy. And then he said, no, it's okay, I can give you plastic surgery on your monster face to look however you want.
Well, that's good to know, Dr. Wilder. Awesome.
So he says, how do you want to look? So Cliff does a little instant sketch of himself, of how he used to look. He looks fairly handsome, doesn't he?
Mm.
Yeah, distinguished. And so Dr. Wilder says, well, we'll prep you for surgery and we'll do the old brain swap.
Mm.
Mm, nothing sus here.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Rita's gone to the chief and explained that Cliff has probably gone to see this Dr. Wilder. The chief, being a genius, has rung the university where Dr. Wilder supposedly taught and discovered that he never taught there. And the European Biology Societies say he's not listed. I didn't know the biology societies, anyway.
Well, if it's not real, it's just comic book science, so, you know.
Yes, but Rita has a queer, cold feeling inside. No, sorry, feelings. Get rid of those. yes. Rita is concerned.
There we go.
Yes. And then we cut to Dr. Wilder putting some sort of swirly ray on Cliff to send him to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Wilder goes towards the mirror and starts manipulating the flesh of her face, and we see it is actually Madame Rouge disguised as Dr. Wilder.
No!
Oh, sneaky, you know what that means. Shape-shifting evil woman.
Mm.
One day she'll come to an unfortunate end, I predict.
Not too soon. Not soon enough.
Not till 1981. Anyway. Yes. So, yes, the plan... The evil plan is where there's Madame Rouge, there's soon to be the Brotherhood of Evil.
Exactly.
And, you know, Cliff is a brain inside a robot body. Are there any other brains sitting around not inside robot bodies at this point?
Ooh, yes. Yes, there are.
Which brain would we be talking about?
The brain.
Well done, Mike.
That's two for two. Go, Mike.
You're joining the dots so well to this episode.
I'm like the chief.
Yes. And this is the type of surgery that you want Monsieur Mallor involved in. So we see Monsieur Mallor is soon in a surgical gown with one of those little lights on his forehead, as was the habit of the old days.
Yeah.
Yeah. They do a great little operation, and suddenly Cliff Steele is no longer Cliff Steele, but the brain inside Robot Man's body.
Mm.
This could be a zany comedy at this point.
Yeah.
So, but the Doom Patrol have Chief reveals that he actually has a tracer inside of Cliff.
Of course he does.
Yeah, because he's a creepy control freak.
He's a concerned team leader.
When he's not sewing dogs together, he's tracking his friends without them knowing. Anyway. So they go to find Cliff, and Cliff's fine. He's fine. He's just talking a little bit differently. So he's lost his working class vernacular and talking.
Hasn't he just?
Like a bit of a tool.
And Larry is suspicious right away because, yeah, Cliff's not talking like Cliff.
Yeah.
What the hell, Cliff?
Yeah. So at this point, naturally, the brain kills them all while he's in their headquarters. Shoots them all in the heads while they're not looking. And that's the end. Oh, hang on. No, he doesn't. He just hangs around with them and... The brother of evil send a giant robot to steal a submarine.
As you do.
A much simpler plan. But it's Rog. Rog's back.
Mm.
And they point out that they did destroy Rog, but obviously the Brotherhood of Evil built a new one. So Rog, the fanged weird giant robot, has picked up a giant sub. So... off they go to fight Rog. So Rita grabs her scuba gear. Meanwhile, Cliff Steele has awoken, and for some reason he's been hooked up into the brain's life support gear. So he's now a robot, a little brain in a jar with a voice box, which makes no sense that the Brotherhood left him in that state. So he's calling out for help through the window, and people come in to see, and... when they see a brain on a table talking at them, they run away. Because they're a bit horrified by that.
I'm also a bit surprised that it's that easy for civilians on the street to just wander into the headquarters of the Brotherhood. But anyway, you know.
Well, maybe the Brotherhood were moving on up to the Doom Patrol headquarters and they didn't really care.
Maybe.
Yeah. So we get into it with Rita and Rog in a great big submarine fight. Rog swinging a submarine around. Very Pacific Rim. Very cool. Rita's on the bottom of the ocean and finds a great big anchor that she lobs at Rog. But as Monsieur Mallor thinks to himself, did she think that puny blow like that could hurt Rog the Indestructible? Go, Monsieur Mallor. Monsieur Mallor's in the nude in this comic, have you noticed?
Yeah, but, you know, he's a gorilla, so...
He's wearing a beret or a jacket or a bandolier.
Was he wearing that in previous 60s issues, though?
I don't know. Well, he was carrying a gun. Maybe I'm mistaking guns for clothing, as I often do.
As you do. I think maybe Morrison gave him the beret and the bandolier.
Oh, no, it hit earlier. I think that was featured in the Doom Patrol, in the Teen Titans we looked at.
Yeah.
New Teen Titans, yeah.
Okay.
That's when it appeared.
All right. Anyway,
enough about that. Rita gets Larry. No, what does she do? She shrinks, and then Larry. How did she contact Larry? I'm trying to work that out.
Well, this is where it all gets a bit weird because, yeah.
She just thinks that she needs Larry, and Larry
and Larry appears. Well, you know,
a negative man appears.
The reason they've gone to the sub is that it's the day that it's getting launched at the obviously, whatever the local harbour is. And that's where Rog's attacked. So the team has been sent there by the chief. So I'm assuming that Larry was just there all along.
Yeah.
So, well, we actually do see that Rita takes two figures in her hand down underwater with her. So that's Cliff and Larry there. But they kind of fade into the background as she grows to giant size and is fighting Rog. So that's when somehow she communicates with Larry that I'm going to shrink. I need you to shoot me up to these little exhaust vents in the back of Rog, and then I'll disable him from within.
Yes. Somehow,
that's just teamwork, I guess.
Yeah. And she's overcome by the heat in there.
Mm.
Yeah. But Cliff, always looking for a chance to use his magnetic feet, walks up the side of Rog. Visual interest.
Mm-hmm.
But Rita is struggling with the heat inside Rog, and then she sees that Cliff, Robot Man, is coming up the side of Rog using his magnetic feet to rescue her, she presumes. But he grabs her, because she's tiny, and locks a little metal collar around her neck, which prevents her from changing size.
Mm. Because it's not actually Cliff.
It's not like, actually Cliff.
What's going on, Cliff? And we know it's the brain.
Yes.
Yeah, but poor Rita.
Yes. Then we head to part three, which is called The Beast of the Doom Patrol. Larry is now swimming around in the vicinity of Rog, and Rog nets Larry in a net.
Yes, made of a special lead alloy. So, of course, he can't shoot Negative Man out.
That's what I like about the Brotherhood of Evil. They're always thinking about what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Always one step ahead, except when they're not. Meanwhile, Cliff has not given up trying to be rescued from this table inside the headquarters. So he's still calling out, and a kindly blind man hears him and is not horrified by his brainish look because the man is blind.
And somehow a blind man makes it into the headquarters of the Brotherhood of Evil.
Some elaborate security they got.
Yeah, so elaborate it's non-existent. Anyway.
Yes, and then we see that Rog and Robot Man are now teamed up, and Monsieur Mallow's driving Rog, and they've got Larry captive, but they had not counted on Rita recovering. But even though she's tiny, she can still get a tiny pair of clippers and swim down and snip Larry out of the net, thus freeing Negative Man.
Yeah. Who can then snap off the lock thing around Rita's neck.
Yeah.
So she's free. Teamwork. Go teamwork.
Yeah. We cut to Nightsmore Road, which could be the Nightmare Road of the title.
Well, that's what the local people call it.
Yeah. And we see the chief has driven himself there in his doom truck. And he's rolling himself down out the door on his little ramp.
Yep.
And then he bumps into Robot Man, who's not even pretending to be Robot Man anymore.
No,
he just can't wait to say, "Hey, it's me, the brain. I'm going to get you."
Yeah, in that exact tone.
Yeah. But before he can, we see that the truck that Chief drove actually has that giant monster thing that now has Cliff's brain inside it.
That's right, because the blind man that heard Cliff that somehow made it into the headquarters of the Brotherhood, he alerted the authorities and got them to alert the Chief.
Yes, so that, and then the Chief did a brain transplant.
You know, now we have record time.
Monster Cliff fighting Robot Man, who's really the brain. Is everyone clear on this? And then we're getting road sign smashing and fighting.
The fight's on for sure.
It is on.
Mm-hmm.
On like Donkey Kong.
Yes.
Yeah, and Cliff inside the monster body absolutely tears Robot Man apart. Evil Robot Man occupied by the brain. And the rest of the Brotherhood show up. So we get Monsieur Mallow and Madame Rouge. And Madame Rouge puts her elastic, stretchy arms around Cliff inside the monster body and throws him into the air. Long way. But Rita's showed up, and she's giant, and she's able to catch Cliff. She's obviously up to speed with what's going on. Mm-hmm. That's good. And she lowers him to the ground, but Madame Rouge has tangled herself around Elastigirl. But then she's zapped by Negative Man.
Go Negative Man.
Go Negative Man. Then we get a great shot of Monsieur Mallard beating his chest as he goes to fight Cliff in the monster body. And Cliff is very proud of the fact that he has no central nervous system, so he doesn't feel any pain.
Quite effective in this fight. Yes.
Yeah. But he hasn't really thought that through. I mean, pain is a good health indicator in life, isn't it?
I think Cliff realizes he's not going to be in this body for long, so he's probably not that concerned.
Yeah. Anyway, he celebrates by ripping off a giant sign and smashing it down on Monsieur Mallard's head.
Mm-hmm.
So that the sign is of some dolphins, and it looks like Monsieur Mallard is being kissed by a dolphin at the end of it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the brain inside Cliff's body has jumped into a car and decided to drive at some gas tanks that will explode. Let's end every comic with an explosion.
Yeah, why not?
The brain leaps out of the car just before it hits. Negative Man zooms in to stop it, and then the car is burning next to the fuel tanks, and then Rita comes up and giant size blows the flames out.
Now there's super breath.
Yeah.
Giant woman and super breath, yeah.
Yeah, and a jet's passing by at this point. A giant airline plane. And Madame Rouge reaches up with her stretchy arms and grabs onto the plane.
Yeah.
Looks like she wraps her legs around Monsieur Mallard and Cliff. Robot Man. Yes. Evil. The Brotherhood of Evil has escaped.
Of course.
Now, presumably the Robot Man body they got was so damaged that the brain had to move out of it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing.
Well, depending on how the rest of that plane ride went.
Yeah.
Anything could have happened.
It's some getaway dangling from a jet plane. Anyway.
Mm.
Yes. And we cut back to see that Chief has done an operation to get Cliff back into a new Robot Man body, but unfortunately the monster died in the process. Oh. And the Chief doesn't he seem cut up about that?
Not at all.
And so is Cliff. He's like, never mind, Chief.
God, yeah. But so, yeah. They stop the Brotherhood stealing a submarine, and they stop them from killing off the Chief again. Yeah, they got away themselves. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
But they're fun comics, aren't they, Mike?
They're a bit of fun. Yeah, Mento. I still have problems with Mento, though. Just such a jerk.
You just don't trust the guy.
You just don't. And as you said before, the scene where he's using his mental powers to put a thought into Rita's head, that's something that doesn't get touched on again for quite some time.
But yeah. It's,
even in that short scene, that's a little bit disturbing.
Yeah, I'm often puzzled by what the Arnold Drake, the writer, what his plan was with Mento, because he introduces him and he's so obnoxious. He's not likable.
Mm.
And, you know, everyone likes the Doom Patrol and he's like horrible to them except for Rita.
Yeah.
So what was the plan? I mean, he marries Rita. They adopt Beast Boy when he's introduced. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like this is just an unresolved thread from this volume one. Like, don't see the big picture. I don't see why it happened. You would expect that there would be a big reveal that Mento was actually a villain at some point, but it never comes in this volume.
No.
Yeah.
I think that's why it was interesting to read that new Teen Titans story, as we did in our last episode. And in a way, he kind of redeemed himself in that he was trying to avenge Rita's death. But that was, you know, 20-something years after this series, so...
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Anyway, yes, there were three relatively fun issues from the 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. So they were all drawn by Bruno Premiani, who is a absolute maniac with a pencil. He's so good. Yeah. I'm not saying that he's dangerous with a pencil.
No.
Public. You know what?
Let's just clear that up. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, doomsplaining done.
Good work.
Thank you. And now it's time for the Mailbag of Doom.
Mm-hmm.
And this week on the Mailbag, we asked everybody, who's your comic character infatuation? And we confused our audience with this question, I believe.
Yeah.
So we heard from Sergeant Merica, I just mentioned Sergeant Merica did a great video review of Doom Patrol Volume 5, Book 1, which he's just found and read.
Mm.
So we saw that. We're very impressed.
Keep Welcome on aboard, reading. Sergeant Merica. Yeah.
Yeah. But he said, Noto's Electra is a cutie, or Cho's Shanna the She-Devil.
Mm.
So Sergeant Merica, heterosexual, I'm saying.
We also heard from, Karthik Kakarala said, it's troubling that I feel like infatuation is where I'm uncertain on the meaning of this question.
Yeah. Yeah, we confused him.
Yeah. Sorry, Karthik.
Yes. Wilfred suggested that maybe obsession would be a better word, but he still wouldn't come to the party after that.
Oh, well.
Yeah. We heard from Rift, Rift1821. And he said, when I was younger, definitely Psylocke. And lately, Carol Ferris, Star Sapphire. That's one hell of a costume.
Oh, Riff. we heard from Nicholas, who is at NICRDE on the Twitter. And I actually work with Nick. He's a good guy.
Really?
Really, yes. You know, I work.
I thought you were unemployed.
Anyway, Nicholas said, Tanker Girl or original Betsy Braddock Psylocke? She got put into the Asian assassin's body. More brain swapping. There you go.
Well, that's a bit of X-Men continuity I'm not familiar with. We heard from Lupin Is Me, M. Bear, if you're not using his Twitter handle. And he said Clara Bronson from Copperhead.
Mm.
And I'm guessing Silk.
Mm-hmm.
So you read Cophead?
Highly recommend Cophead. Clara is the main character. She's a sheriff in the town.
Ah, right.
She's cool. She's cool.
She's cool.
Yeah. We also heard from Dr. Ange.
Dr. Ange.
Dr. Ange 70. Dr. Ange, he's the man. He said, I think infatuation is different than favorite. So for him, from DC, he said it was Lightning Lass from the Legion. And for Marvel, it was Jean Grey.
Oh, very good.
Mm.
We heard from Randy Micah Smith, who's at Randy S0725. I wonder if that was the time of morning he joined Twitter. He said, Black Cat from Spider-Man.
Ooh.
Mm. A foxy little number.
Jess Camacho, at Camacho Jess on Twitter, said Bigby Wolf
from Fables. Bigby Wolf from Fables. Mm. Love a bit of Fables.
Yes.
Yes. You a Fables reader?
Yes, I am. And I have mixed feelings on the final issue coming up.
That's interesting because my final issue of Fables was number 75, and that's when the series should have ended.
It went for twice as long as that, and they're charging twice as much at least for the final issue. So, anyway.
Scary. We heard from Dizzy, who said, Leonard Watch from Blood Blockade Battlefront. So, if I know Dizzy, that's probably a anime manga. Anyway,
yes.
And I believe Leonard Watch is a young bloke who has to keep his eyes shut because he's got god eyes.
Okay. I need to go and research that. We also heard from Jay Bandoy at W Bandoy on Twitter, who said... he was blushing as he posted four pics of Psylocke as well, but not original Betsy Braddock Psylocke, the Asian assassin Psylocke.
Psylocke. Mm. Which one's the one in the movie?
Played
by Olivia Munn.
Well, that's the Asian assassin one.
Okay.
Yes. Betsy Braddock, the original one, she was like a Caucasian British woman with purple hair. And then there were ninjas and mutant powers and stuff, and her brain got put into the assassin's body.
Right. Okay.
Comic book science.
Comic book science. Oh, well, looking forward to seeing Olivia Munn playing that role.
Mm.
Mm. We heard from Kate at KatieScarlet94, and in response to hearing that Carcarella was suggested that he go with the word obsessions, she said, "Then I have 1,200 answers." And she didn't give us a single one. So I really doubt that you have 1,200, Kate.
We also heard from Reggie Hancock, who, big hello and thanks to Reggie for his awesome comment on our Facebook page, where he answered this as well. One of his previous comments was that he came to know Doom Patrol through Morrison's run, and that led him on the path from the Silver Age to the modern age, and that's when he began to love the team. And he was saying that Arnold Drake himself said that Morrison's one was closest to approximating his vision of the Doom Patrol, and Reggie's just been giving us all sorts of interesting comments about the series. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So
I didn't know that. I did not know that.
Didn't you?
Nope.
See, Reggie also said, when we're ready to discuss Arnold Drake, we have to hit him up as he has a ridiculous knowledge of the man.
Oh, so we will do that.
We will do. Reggie has just become our Arnold Drake go-to guy. Thanks, Reggie.
Yes.
But for this question of the week, Reggie said his infatuation was Swamp Thing, perhaps more of a bromance, or that he has chloro feelings for the muck-encrusted mockery.
Chloro feelings. Feelings. No, no, Reggie, no. We also heard from Mart Gray.
Oh.
Mart Gray, who does the fantastic Too Dangerous for a Girl blog.
Mm-hmm.
I just love Pug, the lawyer with a crush on She-Hulk. Just a nice, puppyish, ordinary guy. I'm not familiar with that version of She-Hulk.
No, nor am I.
Pug. Yeah.
More research.
Yeah. But he also said that he hates Jericho, along with us.
Right. Okay. That's kind of opposite of infatuation, but anyway.
Good. Good. And lastly, but definitely not least, we got another email from Dr. Ange.
Oh.
Dr. Ange just has a lot to say, and we welcome it. Mm. In fact, if anyone else out there wants to write an email to us, we will read your email on air, unless it's inappropriate, in which case we will read it in private and message you directly. Anyway.
Oh, God.
So he's talking about the last episode. He said, first off, there's nothing better than some good Robotech talk. That's for you, Mike.
Thanks.
I love that cartoon, flawed by the crazy battles and mecha, as well as the soap opera style relationships. People died. If only you were talking about Dana Sterling and her transforming tanks. Loved her and that arc on the show.
Okay.
Have you got any of those transforming tanks, Mike?
No. Okay. Well, the game only focuses on the first series, so...
They'll come back for your money later.
Sure.
As for the Titans and these issues, there is a lot to talk about. Count me among the ranks of those who hate Jericho. Is there any other character loathed by so many? No. The motivations of Zal and Rouge are tough to understand. If you captured Roboman, your arch nemesis, why string him up outside your base? Why not kill him? Yeah, we've seen a lot of that in these comics we reviewed tonight, didn't we?
Yeah.
And did they really brainwash Mentos that if he was broken out by his friend, he would turn on them? Seems like a long-term plan that includes their base being infiltrated. It's a similar plan to tonight. And then why throw the Titans into a de-evolution pit? We don't know.
Exactly.
It reminds me of the line Dr. Evil says in Austin Powers when his son says they should just shoot Powers. I have a better idea. I'm going to place him in an easily escapable situation that will allow an overly elaborate and exotic death. Anyway, hard to believe that Mento was this crackers 4 years before he goes really nuts in Swamp Thing 50. And that's an issue we'll have to cover at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, while I enjoy the Perez-drawn recaps of the Doom Patrol pages and the ending homage panel, but my biggest beef is there's absolutely no mention at all of the new Doom Patrol, which existed at this point. Arani, Val, Joshua aren't even name dropped. You think Cliff would have been doing this investigation with them. At least say something, they're on another mission to explain why they aren't around. And he also added, I'm convinced that Terry Long was put in the comic so nerds like me would think, if a donkey like that can land Donna Troy, there is hope for me yet. As always, love the show and thanks for putting it together. Thanks, Dr. Ange.
Thanks, Dr. Ange. And thanks to Reggie, too.
Yeah.
Thanks to everyone that listens.
Thanks, Sarge America, for doing the video.
Feelings. I mean...
No feelings.
No feelings. Okay. I think that's pretty much our show for this week.
Yeah.
As always, if you want to get in touch with us, you can reach us on Twitter at WFDpod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. And you can also reach us on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page, like Reggie does.
Yeah. Coming up next week, we may do a special episode. We're looking at one of the benefits of living in Australia at the moment and England is you get to see the Avengers Age of Ultron before the rest of the world. So,
We're going to spoil the entire thing.
We're going to do that because we can. We hardly ever get in this situation.
All the times I've looked on Twitter and, oh, look, this show's been spoiled and this happened in The Flash and this just happened in Game of Thrones. Well, guess what, people?
Revenge. Mike's revenge.
That's what we'll call the next episode, Age of Mike's Revenge.
Yeah, and we'll probably put this one up a bit earlier than usual.
Yeah.
And we won't follow the usual format, so there'll be no question of the week for that one.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll be back after that with more Grant Morrison and possibly a special guest star.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Sounds awesome. Thank you, Paul. Thanks everyone, Mark, for listening. We'll catch you all next time.
Bye.